active regarding programming and opportunities throughout the district. Obviously, last year with some transition, that did not occur. So we're very excited, very proud. Mr. Brett Fry, who's filled the void and will continue to serve as the leader of the Special Education Department and provide us this evening an overview of special education services offered throughout the district. And the board is cognizant that these services and programs obviously come at a budgetary cost, and they are a major budgetary driver. So, to that end, tonight's presentation will really be a kickoff to broader budgetary discussions as we prepare the 2021-2022 budget. So I certainly encourage the board to pay attention. If you could refrain from questions until the end, I know Mr. Fry has some questions about time to build in. Initially, before I turn it over to Mr. Fry, thank you so much for all the participation of the audience. I know it's a team effort for you. I'll turn it over to Mr. Fry.
All right. So I just wanted to say thank you for this opportunity. We've spent, I would say, a lot of time working together, collaborating as far as what this presentation is going to look like. And I just wanted to say thank you for giving us the opportunity to be the first department of the school year to talk about some of the things that we've done and some of the things that we're looking at moving forward. Before we get started, I did want to do an introduction to our special education staff. The people that are here tonight, some of them are teachers, school psychologists, behavior specialists, and obviously our assistant director, Amy. I'd like to introduce them because they are really the core of our leadership team. Without them, we have kind of a mission and a statement that we work with these individuals on, and these other individuals take that mission and vision and actually deploy that within our buildings. So I just want to take a few moments to introduce them, first with Amy Kostoff, our assistant director, Jill Trimmer, she's our emotional support behavior specialist, Chris Burkoff, school psychologist, Carrie Miller, school psychologist, Jen Eckert, school psychologist, and Nicole Rupp, school psychologist, and then our subject area leaders here. We have Ashley Gensler, she's our K-3 subject area leader. Jamie Gorsinger is our 4-6 subject area leader. Katherine Ross, she is our 7-8 grade subject area leader at the middle school. And then Andrew Snyder, who is our high school subject area leader. So one of the things that we wanted to do as far as the kickoff the year was one of the big missions that we had was trying to kind of reassemble ourselves as a department. So this summer, this past year, I spent a lot of time going into buildings, meeting with the teachers, students, and programs, as well as our staff. And what we wanted to do was come back. We wanted to kick off the year with a special education staff development day. So what we wanted to do was we brought everybody together on August 19th, and it was our first district-wide department meeting in 7 years. And part of that was taking a look at the district mission and vision statement and implementing that. We challenged the teachers to think about, why are you a special education teacher? Let's go back to your first day as a teacher, being excited. Who are you? What do you want to do? Why are you in the position that you have? So we challenged them to actually come up with those reasons why, you know, they do what they do, to kind of recenter themselves. The other part that we did was a get-to-know-you activity. We are a big district with a lot of teachers, and many of the teachers, they don't know each other from building to building. If you're within a K-3, you may not know somebody who's in, you know, the high school and not the 12th building. So part of it was a mix-it-up idea where everybody got together, they got to know some different people within the department, and they asked themselves, why are we here doing what we do? So that was a part of our kickoff. And then we got to the nitty-gritty, which was talking about our special education audit overview that took place in March. And then we had given compliance expectations, which was something that was that we wanted to do because listening to our subject area leaders as well as our office staff was something that we wanted to give consistent expectations from the K-12 level. And that was these were things that we had planned through the summer and through last year and we wanted to deploy. And at the end of the day, we actually had a subject area leader meeting where Amy and myself, we were able to circulate around, answer questions, and see our staff. So, one of the activities that we did, we actually had our teachers come together and they asked why they're a special ed teacher. And they actually went in, we actually had a poll everywhere, and all the teachers in their groups actually came up with kind of this word cloud, and from that word cloud, that was becoming like why we do what we do. And you can see probably the biggest word there that you see is difference, make a difference. And that's something that when we walked away with that, walked away that day, That's what we want to do in all of our students' lives, make a difference. But all those words actually make up from the department. That was something that came from the department themselves. It wasn't something that we drove, it's something that they drove. We want to have that buy-in from them because we feel as though that's important. And it comes back to the root of that. Why are you a special education teacher? So, one of the things that we do is we rely upon these individuals here, our subject area leaders, to deploy the things that we talk about. So we have a once a month meeting where Amy and I actually meet with the staff. We also invite at times our behavior specialists and school psychologists sometimes. And really what we're trying to do is communicate expectations, compliance, things that we're seeing, and we want to communicate that down to the subject area leaders and give them resources to be able to deploy within their buildings. So this year we have a goal of not only being a part of the subject area leader meetings, but also going out to the department meetings within the buildings. We need to be visible, we need to have that communication with our staff members, because I think it's important to hear their voice as we're gathering the information that we need to make decisions on. So, but a part of that, we want to give these guys ammunition to be able to go in there, to be able to ask questions, but also provide professional development and things like that. So, one of the things I like to do is challenge the school board here is to test your special ed knowledge. And what we've done is we're doing monthly Kahoots. I learned Kahoot, I would say. It's taken me a little bit to know this. But what we have here is a Kahoot. It's three questions. They're fairly easy questions if you're a special ed teacher, but something that we're using to deploy some professional development opportunities to test your knowledge. So if you guys are up to it, we'd like to have you do three Kahoot questions if you guys are up to it. Is that okay?
Sure.
You can use your devices, cell phones, any of that sort of stuff.
I know.
So you guys go to that website and put your pin in and it'll ask you. So how many days do you have to complete a new IEP after a reevaluation report is completed? Hey, we got 30 days. Yes, you have 30 days to complete that report. Or complete the IEP after the reevaluation report is completed. All right. So, should you have dates with your progress monitoring data folks? Right. So yes, we've asked our teachers to put that in, but yes is the correct answer. So we'll jump back into thank you for your participation and let's see who won. Mr. Bartman.
Hey.
He gets points.
Pay attention, my wife.
All right. Thank you for your participation. But this is how we're going to deploy professional development through these activities. They're fun, interactive. It gives our staff members a way of, these guys an opportunity to teach their staff members within the department. But then also we're going to have different themes throughout each month. So this month's theme was talking about goal development and progress monitoring. So that's where our focus is each month, and then we're going to deploy that to our subject area leaders and then out to the staff within the buildings. So, just to touch upon real quickly here, one of the things coming on board Dr. Dyer challenged me with and challenged our office with was to redo our paraprofessional development program. So each year, each paraprofessional in special education is required to do 20 hours. So this past year, we worked with Dr. Free, we worked with, I have to say, Penny Jenkins, Teresa Enenheiser, our office staff to come up with some great topics for this year to actually train our staff members on. So the things that we look at is we review training opportunities, classroom expectations, and then also access to district technology. And I have to actually give Mr. Stauffer, a really big thank you because he actually met with each and every person, got them online, got them on Master Teacher, all the different programs on that day. But not only does that day we have that actually kicks off the program for the entire year. So we have a menu of learning for our teachers, but now we have that same menu of learning for our paraprofessionals. And our hope is that we can retain and we can train our paraprofessionals and give them a great opportunity to be lifelong members of the Dallas County community. So we want to make sure that they're given the support and the resources they need that will impact them in their classroom. So we talked a little bit about this, the different training opportunities. They're going to be varied from year to year. And one of the things that we want to do is get feedback from them. So at the end of the year, or towards the end of the year, as we're developing it, Dr. Free and I talked about what we'd like to do is actually send a survey out and get their input. We feel as though the paraprofessionals, they are doing a lot of the work as far as kind of knee-deep in the field, working with our students, some of our most challenging students, and we need to get their perspective and some opportunities, what they are looking for. I think one of the discussions that we had with Mr. Stauffer, that was something that actually came back to when we were part of a Zoom conference last week, which was, the access, the technology to be able to, support our students within the different buildings and programs. So a lot of these discussions that are happening came from this opportunity there. So I think as we grow and as that changes and evolves, I think we have a program that's going to better serve our students and our staff moving forward into the future. So just kind of the summary, one of the things we talked about is that compliance monitoring audit, which is really key, really critical. We talked about the new teacher and paraprofessionals, providing them with different professional development opportunities. We looked at our subject area leaders, to them to gather feedback of what's happening day to day, and then and give them our expectations to, work within the buildings to support our teachers and students. And then one of the things we look at are the three goals for this year. We want our teachers to be compassionate, we want them to be compliant, and then we're also going to be focusing on the curriculum instruction piece. So those are going to be things that we're working with Dr. Free in her office, looking at into the future. But we want our teachers to remember why they're doing what they're doing, and why are they a special education teacher? That's what it comes back to for us. One of the other highlights I wanted to talk about was Holly Dell, who cannot be with us tonight, and Jill Trimmer, our behavior specialist. And I know last year we added a second behavior specialist to the district, and I will tell you that our behavior specialists do an exceptional job working with our autistic support population as well as our emotional support population. But I think what we want to do is kind of give a little bit of clarity about what they do. So if you look at them doing, like, they serve many different roles, but if we had to summarize it, you look at as far as support for the special education department, they'll attend IEP meetings, they'll work on developing FBAs, positive behavior support plans, they facilitate and order our past materials, they've even substituted in our specialized classrooms when there is a need for substituting. They serve as case management. Case managers for, when we're down a position. So within the special education department, they've served in many different facets. And one of the facets they really help us on is attending those IEP meetings and providing the team feedback on behavioral needs for our students. The other piece that they do is they support our families, they support our staff, our students. And what they do is they do many things that kind of go above and beyond what their job, what their duties are. But even today, this evening, Jill and Chris provided trauma training for our paraprofessional staff, and making them aware of trends that are happening within the mental health community and how to support our students here at Dallas now. They support families through the crisis process. And the reality is we have families that are going through crisis. We have individuals who can go with them to support them, because the most important thing is, what happens after the student leaves from school? How can we support our families better? Because eventually they're going to be coming back to our school. We want to build that relationship and provide those supports. They also work with coordinating outside services and agencies, NHIVD, SAM. There's many that they work with, but they provide our families with different resources, even setting up a CAS meeting to organize all of the service providers together to support our families. The third thing they do is a pre-referral process. And really what they do is they actually go out to support our regular education staff and building principals when a student has behavior. And if a student is running into a situation where the behavior is becoming a difficulty and they're looking at, looking at collecting data or looking for interventions, they will actually go out to the building, they'll observe the student, they'll work with the team and give suggestions. And many times they're able to provide an intervention before that child goes into the pipeline for special education testing. And really kind of save us from that referral from a student going into special education. But if they do go into special education in that pipeline, Jill and Holly is able to kind of set up those parameters as far as that data collection. So when they go through the evaluation process, it makes it much smoother. We have better data to be able to make educational decisions based upon the information that's collected when they go out. So just in summary, our behavior specialist provides, Dallas Center School District with meaningful interventions to meet our students' needs. They provide our teachers, paraprofessionals, administrators training opportunities that are in line with the trends that are happening, whether it's in mental health or areas of behavior. And then they also support our families through the referral process and help them with community resources. Our school psychologists, obviously they're here tonight. These are the buildings that they work in. Chris Burcox works in Dallas Elementary, Leaders Heights, as well as York Township. Jen Eckert works in our secondary buildings at middle school and the high school. Carrie Miller works at Loganville and North Valley, and then Nicole Roper works at our Dallas County Intermediate School. So, psychological services go beyond testing. I think a lot of people think about our psychs, what they do. They provide just the testing pieces of it, but they actually provide more than that. They provide social skills, instruction for some of our specialized classes. They provide counseling in groups. They also provide more in-depth evaluations. There was a situation last year where we needed to do a neuropsych, and we were able to utilize Mickey to be able to go out to the middle school to provide that. That saves the district cost from having to go and reach out to the IU and pay for those costs. So having the staff that's here, we're able to implement and do some different things, whereas in the past, we would have to reach out to the intermediate unit to secure those things. Jen Eckert spent a and we worked on extensively completing, she's done risk assessments and manifestation determination, but there again, that's something that we've contracted from an outside source, the IU, and we feel as though that, the things that they've provided our staff and students are really critical. And then they've also provided staff trainings, and that includes teachers and paraprofessionals. One of the things that we are seeing is the mental health needs. Mental health needs are on the rise. We're seeing an increase of mental health needs within our schools. You know, behavioral and developmental needs. You know, they have the statistics up here. I don't really read all of them, but you can see that 1 in 5 children experience a mental health problem during their school years. And I can tell you that, especially between the intermediate school and the high school, we've seen a growing amount of need within that area. These individuals have been able to support that, along with our behavior specialists, support the needs within our school district. All right, so I was told I need to keep this to 22 minutes, so I'm trying to keep it down. No, I'm kidding.
There you are.
So I'm already over my time at this point. So one of the things I know that we want to jump into is kind of what is our special education overview as far as the 2019-2020 school year. So I'd like to jump into the numbers here a little bit. I want to give you guys an opportunity to ask some questions when we come back to it at the very end. So if you guys feel like I'm rushing through, I apologize, but I want to give you guys the opportunity to ask questions to the staff and myself as well. So taking a look at our 18-19 data, Dallas Center East School District has 1,254 special education students. So if you look at as far as across the county, these are the numbers that we were able to pull from our December 1st child count. And as you see, based upon those numbers, you can see that Dallas Town is second only to York City. Some of our neighboring districts, Central York, has 708 students. Redline, which is, you know, probably our closest neighbor, has 891 students. You can see as far as the special ed population and the growth, and we'll talk a little bit about that, some of the reasons why we're seeing what we're seeing. One of the things I want to say is what we do. And I do feel like Dallas Town does more with less to a certain degree. These are the total number of LEAs that are within the districts across the county. And if you take a look at Dallas Town, we have two. Amy Kostoff and myself serve as the special education office's LEAs. But comparatively speaking, if you look at Redline Area School District, Redline has 4, but they actually have 2 supervisors of special education, a director, and they actually have a teacher on special assignment, they call it. Central York has 3 supervisors of special education and a director of special education. And I would dare to say that we have more specialized classes and programs within our district than most of the districts that are running across there. So I'm proud of the fact that we have a very strong staff. We have a very strong admin staff in our building levels that provide us a lot of assistance when it's needed. But I feel as though that's a much collaboration that takes a lot of time that we work through and work with each other. You can see as far as the trends as we're growing, and you can see from last year to this year, you know, we're up almost 100 students from where we were from last year. I spoke to Teresa Emanheiser, our special education secretary, and I asked Teresa, since July 1st, how many special ed movements have we had? We have 111 kids moving into the district with special education needs. So based upon the information, yes, we do have some students that are moving out, but we do have more students that are moving in to the district that require special education than those that are moving out. I can speak for the intermediate school. I believe that we were at 25 or 26.
25% of our move-ins, 25 students.
So we see that there's more families, more students moving into the district that have IEPs and require special needs. So we see that as one of the trends that we see, just kind of moving forward with the numbers. So as I said, right now, as of September 9th, our number was 1,254 students into the Dallas County Area School District. So one of the highlights that I do want to share is our new behavioral intervention program at the K-6 level. So we were very fortunate last year, very thankful that the board allowed us to have an additional teacher at the intermediate school. And I can tell you from our K-3 and our 4-6 buildings, it has made a tremendous difference as far as the quality of instruction and programming. But on top of that, it's going to allow us to provide an intervention. And what I mean by that is students that we would look at as typically being in the pipeline as far as their special education with behavioral needs, we were able to get a separate, which is basically what it does is it allows us our special education programming. We have a dual certified teacher in our K-3 class and our 4-6 class that can serve not only regular education students, but special education students. So in a pre-referral situation, what we're able to do is a lot of times if a student had a behavioral need, we were looking at what resources can we provide? And sometimes we provide it outside resources like Alliance 5 with the LIU, and we also provide a River Rock. By doing this new model, what we've been able to do is provide a student an intervention within the district, which essentially what that does is save the district costs, and it also saves that relationship as far as what the family goes. And if we're looking at like an ADM cost where a student is actually going out to Alliance Pride, we received our LIU bill as of August 1st, it's $295 a day. So we have a regular ed student that's going out, we're paying them $300 a day to educate them outside of Dallas Town. With this model, we're able to educate that student within Dallas Town, provide the interventions, provide the resources within the district. And essentially, our hope is that that's going to save costs, but also we're able to stabilize students before they would get into the special education referral process. And if they get into the special education referral process, we're able to provide stabilization before we qualify them. So if you take a look at our programs, 17.9% of our total population is special education. Broken down as of actually today, just kind of speaking numbers, 92% of our students reside in Dallas Town. That could be LIU classes or Dallas Town classes. We have about 3% that are operating in an LIU or other building outside of the Dallas Town Area School District. We have 3% of our students in Burke County School of Technology, and then our all ed settings, specialized schools, and residential facilities were less than 1%. So if we take a look at this, this is costs related to outside placements. So this is actually given from us from the LIU. The LIU gives us our Schedule A, and based upon these costs, these are the program costs for the pupils within each of these buildings. So if you take a look, autistic support is $43,115. Now, the reconciled cost can be different. Typically, the cost does change and vary throughout the year, but more than likely than not, that number is going to be very close to what this number is. So if you take a look at the range of costs and then down at our private specialized schools, that would be somewhere like Soaring Heights or a New Story, the cost range goes from $67,000 to about $111,000. So one of the things I just want to bring to your attention here is we have an LIU operating cost and we have a district cost. I highlighted our autistic support because we actually added two LIU classes to York Township. Very thankful for the support of Mr. Bouchelon and obviously this CASA to help us with that. But you can see as far as how much the LIU operating cost is compared to the Dallas County Area School District cost. So I highlighted the LIU operating cost for autistic support just to give you, based upon that ADM, that cost per tuition of $43,000 compared to our Dallas Town cost, you can see that there's quite a bit of a difference there. When we broke down the numbers, we have a potential cost saving of about $3.9 million. So being able to supply the supports within our district, within our buildings, we actually have an ability to save the district money. Now obviously, what I want to say is that cost is based upon estimates. That cost can vary and fluctuate based upon as far as like what outside placements cost or LIU costs, because they can adjust around the school year. Here is our, this is our Schedule A, our reconciled Schedule A. You can see about 4 years ago, it was $4.1 million. Then we had 2 years where it was about $3.7 million, and this past year it was $4.1 million. Now, root causes to the change of LIU costs, obviously increase in special education population. So as special ed population increases, that cost increases. Student needs can fluctuate from year to year. Taking a look at our Schedule A, you can see that cost between 16, 17, 18, 19, and 19, 20, that cost will fluctuate and change based upon those needs and program costs. A lot of times, if we don't have placements available in the district, we have to look at LIU operated programs and seek out those programs because our programs are filled and are at capacity. And then also, with LIU costs actually goes up because they have to deal with the same things that we have to deal with, which is staff salaries, benefits, those types of things. So benefits of district operating programs. It's cost effective. We offer a full continuum of services provided with our specialized programs. What that means is those specialized programs are provided in our own district. increased opportunities for inclusion, to get our kids to be able to be with their peers. And I think a lot of times that's what our families are looking for. It encourages school and community to take ownership. Staff develop a respect for individual differences, and it provides a sense of belonging. Dallastown students want to be in Dallastown. I think that's only natural for most students and for most families. Challenges with district operated programs. One of the big things that we run into is our specialized programs. With that specialized program, it creates a higher level of need. An autistic support class could only have 8 students in it, but the reality is the needs within that class, they far outweigh some of the needs that are in, let's say, our itinerant learning support students. You know, we have increased staff and increased need within those classrooms. Obviously, we kind of taking a look at some of those other things that we're impacted by is program expansion. As families move into the district with more extensive needs, you know, we're limited on what programs and what resources that we can provide those families. And once we hit that kind of that threshold, we're having to see other opportunities for them outside of the district. The other big thing is that increased oversight as far as like the demands, as far as on teachers, staff, and administrators especially. As we increase that student count and as students move in and as we increase those specialized classes, it requires more of a demand on really our office staff. And then larger class sizes for inclusion. You can see that throughout our intermediate school, our middle school. We're seeing like increased class size because of the demand being placed on those classrooms, especially in our learning support programs. And I will say this, Dallastown has some of the highest caseloads within the county compared to some of our neighboring districts. So in summary, the district special education population continues to grow. You know, we're serving students well, saving the district a significant amount of money through district-operated programs. District-operated programs are creating resource challenges. And the special education department will require additional resources as the student populations grow. So, I want to give you guys as far as some time for questions or comments or anything else. We have our staff up here that I think, you know, obviously if we needed to, we can pitch a question to them if needed. So, I just want to say thank you again for giving us some time and to speak to you guys.
Thank you. You made a very good presentation. Any questions?
Yeah, are we mandated by the state to supply the full spectrum of the different types of special ed?
Well, we are. I mean, if a student moves into the district, we are mandated to provide those services for that student.
Or you could, roll back to your annual cost of 25, I guess. We have broken apart the costs by different types of support.
Right here, or?
Yeah, that's about either one.
Okay.
Would we have the ability as a district to the biggest cost driver on there is the emotional support, highest most kids, right? So would we be able to look down through there and say, you know, maybe we as a district aren't up the level we want to be with one of the other support groups? Could we not offer the services in-house for some of those and use the LIU to perhaps allow for more capacity on more emotional support kids?
So
we talk about being at full capacity, right?
Yeah, so we do fill a program, so what happened would be number two things. You know, we would come to Hospital Kirk and, you know, Dr. Dyer, Dr. Dahl and say, hey, we have a program that is at capacity. We have two options. We can look at outside placements, and or can we look at adding a staff member. And sometimes, you know, with as far as budgetary constraints, it's very difficult at times to add a staff member, especially in a year. Those are options that we look at, but we have a time period, a pretty quick turnaround time period of placing students after they're identified or if they move to into the district. You know, we are mandated to find them a placement, an appropriate placement for their needs. If you don't, then that gives us off the liability and family, you know, to claim that we're denying our job there.
So we're going to quickly approach a capacity level of all the rest of the non-special ed programs as well. So we're running at a point where we just don't have rooms.
Yeah.
So, you know, when you end a school, what do, right? So we can't displace regular ed, but we can't continue to take on special ed. You know, we're gonna reach this crescendo where we just, if you're new, you're going out. I mean, how do we play the, I don't want to say play, but what do you do when you got kids that come in and there's nowhere to go and they just want to pound at this and the families want to hear?
I think coming back to it, I think it's all about building that relationship. And I will say that this is an excellent job of going and going into that situation. I think part of it is having foresight and planning, is looking in the future. I mean, there's no magic ball that we can look at.
Yeah, we don't know what the next shot up to the door means.
Correct, but I do think that, you know, I think we try to work creatively to look at, like, different programming options, just like, you know, the intervention classroom, utilizing our services within our own district to provide that at-risk student that intervention that we need before we have to serve and send them out. Coming back to it, I think a lot of it is planning, and a lot of it is, you know, we can't predict what's going to come through, what child's going to register with the district. We have family more registered this summer with pretty extensive needs. We were fortunate to be able to service those kids within our district, but initially we had the conversation that we may need to look outside the district to provide the resources for the children.
Because the other unfortunate lever, they're spread across K-12. And from the mainstreaming, we're not allowed to provide a campus that could support all of them because they need to be in the least restrictive environment, right? So, I mean, we get to a point where we can't just park trailers outside and push kids into it, I guess.
You're really talking about a space issue. We're talking about COVID they're receiving. Part of this also is something that's a fair share that we've got to use. So we have a number of IB programs. Presently, we're 4 classrooms above what is required. So I would predict for the next year or two, especially with the springtime comes online, we may have to push some of those IU-driven programs out in order to gain some capacity and space time.
Thank you. Yeah, and if you look at it as far as, like, the program costs, I mean, there's definitely, I mean, we've talked about as far as, like, kind of a break-even and those things, but, you know, if you break it down by program, by student, you know, there is a cost savings looking for more than to look at that. So.
Just a quick, easy question. I'm really sorry. What is media?
So that is average daily membership.
Okay, that's
what I was asking, but it wasn't sure. Okay. Yeah, so that basically what a full-time ADM is based upon percentage of the student's IEP. So that is based upon a 100% ADM. They have the IEP members what they consider to be the student, if I'm not mistaken, and then based upon that reverse cost, that gets deducted from that total ADM cost.
Thank you, first of all, for speaking for presenting this. This gives us a good overview besides just numbers. It lets us know what you guys are doing. So thank you for bringing that to us. I know with the LIU, we always struggle every year with trying to find teachers. Brandon, what more teachers are you looking for at the LIU? Do we have an issue with trying to find special ed teachers?
I can tell you that we had, I'm not sure, we had 5 open positions, and at times it was a struggle finding an individual. So we had to go through many times and interviews for our specialized classes. The other part of it was we had gone through the intermediate school. We had several interviews. We want to make sure that we're getting the right staff member, the right fit for our programs. We don't want to settle for somebody who just gets a certification and they're filling a void, because obviously we want to make sure that person's going to make a meaningful impact. But we have also faced some of the similar challenges, even being here at Dallas County, other districts in the IEO case this past year.
And then I'm assuming that number, that 1,200, that includes the LIU, the students that are in the LIU programs, right? That's not just our in-house.
As far as what?
The 12, whatever that number was, the 1,200.
Correct.
So that's the one outside placement.
Correct.
In-house.
Yeah, we have about 1,100, well, within our district, there's about 1,154 students, including LIU students and programs here in the district. But yeah, that includes students that are at the LIU.
Okay.
That's what we're doing.
Thank you.
We're gonna jump off quick, that's not good. Anyway.
My point was kind of wonky, but so because the student comes in from another district, they pick on Red Line, you like the other. How soon can we reevaluate your IEP? Can we do that right away, or is there a set period? And then kind of part B of that question is how good are the IEPs that are coming in? So for example, students come in and they say, well, they need a reading enrichment. We have a student for a couple days and say, well, then we need this level of service or maybe more level of service. So how reliable are the IEPs coming from outside, and can we when can we reevaluate?
We have to offer similar programming when a student comes in. So that's an important piece of it, because we don't want to deny a student faith. You know, we may feel over a period of time as a student adjusting to the program that we want to take a look, maybe reevaluate where we're at, and then make a determination if additional services or reduced services. But we want to make sure that we're offering a similar program when the students comes in. That's important. And it works on both ends. If there's a greater need and the parents are pushing for less of a need, we face that this year, we kind of have to stand our ground and say, this is the appropriate program for the child. Because if we give into that inclination, we're the experts, whereas the parents aren't the experts, and then that could also get us into trouble as far as, you know, the potential legal process or any of those type of events.
Thanks for the presentation. It's always very helpful, especially to those of us who aren't so hard on as far as the questions go. When you talk about faith, and you talk about specifically the appropriate part of that, and I realize I'm speaking to this as a very new board member and not at a level of understanding most of the people in the room. Where does the level of appropriateness, where is that determined? I mean, if one looks strictly at the numbers here, look at the cost of these private specialized schools, they're significantly higher percentage of spending than we spend on our general student populations on an annual basis. I know it's not free and equitable education, it's free and appropriate. So I'm kind of just wondering, where is that level of appropriateness set?
Well, it's set by the IEP, and it really starts from there as far as determining the level of the need for the child. Students that are in our specialized programs or students that are in some of the private specialized schools, they have a greater need. And, you know, with it being federally mandated, we need to make sure that we're providing the resources for an appropriate education. So students that would be in some of the privatized schools, they have a need that cannot be filled within the school district. Many times before we get to that point, students have kind of gone through our programs, and it's exceeded as far as the staff capacity, it's exceeded the administrative capacity, and we really need to get into what we call more restrictive placement. And it could be for an assortment of things. It could be for, it could be for a child with, I'm thinking of two children right now who have, with autism, and their needs are far extreme as far as what the district would be able to provide. At a certain point, you have to make sure that you're providing the appropriateness for their safety and well-being, but also provide them the education that they need. You know, we look at those things and take them very serious. We try to go through that continuum before we get to that point, but if that need is greater and we're unable to provide it, you also risk the other end of providing them less. Less isn't always more. We provide them less and we put ourselves at risk, put them at risk. Especially with mental health on the rise, we have to take part in all those things as far as kind of moving forward. But that is something that is determined at the meeting. We take that very serious as far as like what we're spending, what we're looking at. We will question, if it's a facility, we will question costs. We will work with them as far as to provide resources. One facility wants to provide their own PCA. Well, we will look from within to see if we can provide that. Which saves us a cost, and it still gives us that connection from within. But it's all done on an individual basis, and when we get to that higher level of need, we take that serious conversation that we have with Kurt, with Dr. Dyer, and you know, in the future, it'll be with Dr. Dahl as well, to move them in, and then also with our building level leaders as well, so kind of as we move forward through that. But it's done individually. We don't, you know, we never claim that we have a Cadillac. We want to provide, you know, I think that's it, Kurt, like a reliable Toyota. That's the quality. And, you know, we're very proud of what we do here. But we also know that if a child does need something that's more, we have to work towards that and provide that to them and support them.
Just a quick question, since you're on this slide, just kind of remind us. The state basically looks at the cost per regular education student or the allotment of about 16,000 to 18,000 a year. Is that a pretty good average?
Probably more around 12 to 13.
And what do they look at from a special ed student?
About double than that.
24. So even still.
Correct.
50 to 100 to 300% less than what your cost is.
Correct. One of the things I want to say, this is related to IV costs and outside placements. That's not the actual cost of what we're going to do here at Dallas now. And I will say that, you know, Mr. Law has, you know, guided us and given us a lot of feedback on, you know, what we can do and kind of a break-even points and things of that sort when we're looking at these line items.
Well, I think to this surprise credit, we've done this previously, is bringing some of these positions earlier in the budget process rather than waiting until the April and May timeframe that we've unfortunately gotten to the last 2 years. So I think that's part of what we're working towards, that early in the budget process, we kind of have a projection and an idea of what we want to bring back and propose, that there's some time to vet those out and get those before the board.
I just have two quick questions. In looking at your charts, you stated that 17.9% of our total student population is special ed. And you're looking at the county breakdown, you know, there's no numbers on here for what the student population is, but I believe, just eyeballing this, that our percentage of students that are in special ed is higher than the county average.
We're slightly above the state average. I think the state average was about 17% last year.
And you also made mention of the high number of move-ins, and that one chart where you have a year-by-year breakdown of our student or our special ed. It appears that our special ed population has grown at a much faster rate than our overall student population. So, what I'm getting at, you feel that we're a bank?
Well, so I think it's like any good school district. I think that school district has a reputation, a good reputation for, like, even families that are looking, like, if my family was looking to relocate to York County, I'd look at Dallas now as being one of those places. So
and that's a testament to all of you.
So I'm not being
ready. We hear that.
Okay. Yeah. And I think amongst the community, you know, it's not uncommon here, like, you know, Dallas Town is great in programs, not just special ed programs across the board. So I think it's the reputation. I think it's the quality of what these guys provide, and those guys as well, I'm sure, that provide our students. So I think a lot of it's community. I think a lot of it is the hard work and dedication of these individuals.
And my final question, I'll ask even though Dr. Dyer is not here this evening, is do you provide any specialized counseling for Steelers parents?
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you again, guys. I really appreciate it.
I'll put on respect and kind of. And I'm not advocating an open book or anything. I think what we do is 100% perfect, but for some reason, I don't know why, I got off my normal Hallmark channel and ended up on the History Channel. It kind of it stuck with me this whole time on Nazi Germany. And you show the picture, I'm sure they were less than 6 years but long down. And you were teaching those kids, okay, this is how much it cost to educate, quote, one of the kids. Then they went down the line, how much it cost in special needs or handicap, and that just kind of stuck in my mind. I'm not usually like that, but that really, I'm the one that bothers me, but it's stuck in my mind that they're teaching these young kids. You know, just, I mean, we've come a long way, but I guess history's a good thing to remember. I just, I said, oh boy, that's, I'll be able to get away with that. So that will be the perspective.
Thanks, Mr. Mitchell.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
And thank you, Brian.